Hello, everyone. Thank you for the invitation to talk, and it's wonderful to meet together with people fellowshipping and worshipping God, and it's wonderful to see so many people here. But we need more people here, don't we? We need to reach more people. My wife and I have had the pleasure of being away on a holiday just up at Halifax Park in Port Stephens there for 9 days or so, and our children had bought Colleen a birthday gift to do a cruise out to Broughton Island and to see there, and that was really lovely. We saw dolphins on the way when we landed at the island. We saw the rays were all coming around where the boat came in, and we could see them. And some of the children that were on the trip came and they could touch the rays, and we saw the beautiful scenery on the island. And regularly we were swimming in the little beach there at Halifax Park, and one day a dolphin came in and swam in amongst the swimmers just offshore. I had actually just stepped out of the shore, so because I don't know what it would feel like sort of standing there turning around and then this fin comes through the water behind you. But while I was swimming there, a little fairy penguin swam past me as well. So that was really lovely. And on the Wednesday, our daughter, oldest daughter Alice, rang us very excited that she had just applied for a management position with the Antarctic Research Division. And she was so excited. She'd got several people who write professional speeches to critique her application, and a federal member of parliament to critique it as well. So she's obviously very keen. But she suggested that, she said to me, "Dad, you might like to go and see the movie Shackleton." And she said, "Adam and I, my husband and I, we can't go and see it because they're only showing it weekdays at 10 a.m. in the morning, so we're working, we can't get to see it." So Colin and I decided to go on a date and see it on Thursday. And it was interesting. It wasn't a Hollywood movie. It was a documentary made by an environmentalist who wanted to retrace Shackleton's steps. Essentially show that the glaciers, a couple of the glaciers that were really confronting for Shackleton, were no longer there. They've melted. But one of the things that disappointed me was that, honest spelled O-N, isn't it? Was that they didn't mention in the film, apart from one little quote that he wrote where he talked about God, they didn't mention Shackleton's faith. And when I looked him up on Wikipedia as well, they said, well, Shackleton was not a religious man, but he was a spiritual man. But it's interesting, I don't know, some of the young people may not know his story, but to read his book is really an eye-opener. He's an amazing man in many ways. So that's the period he lived in. He died at 47. He joined Captain Robert Scott's first expedition to Antarctica back in 1904. Remember, they were trying to reach the South Pole. And then he, in 1908, he returned and led the British Antarctic expedition. And they used sledge. They pulled sledges by hand, but they ran into massive problems with the uneven terrain. And then a storm came. They got within 180 kilometres of the South Pole and they had to turn back. I was so disappointing. And then, of course, a couple of years later, Scott, of course, mounted another attempt in which they died, unfortunately, and a Munston, the Norwegian guy, beat them to the pole in 1911. In 1914, so the only thing left to do then really was to cross Antarctica. And so Shackleton advertised for men to join him on an expedition. There were about 5,000 applications, and he picked 27 men to come with him. That's his ship, the Endurance, and became trapped in the ice. They were trying to sail through the pack ice, became trapped. And as the ice melted and expanded, it crushed the ship, and that's it sinking there in the ice floe. And so they were literally just on the ice. I don't know how well you can see this, but this is his journey there. So South Georgia, so you can see South America here, the Falkland Islands, and South Georgia Island, there was a whaling station here. And that's where they sent off on their ship. The Endurance got trapped in ice, South Pole's down here. And they drifted on the ice, solid ice. The ship was crushed there, and so they're on ice out in the middle of the sea. They drifted, and gradually the iceberg broke up, and they had to man the lifeboats, and they sailed and rowed up to Elephant Island, named after elephant seals. Now, the island is surrounded by cliffs, and so there was one little bay where there were about 100 metres by 50 metre space where they were able to find a little beach that they could land on. And they were there for a long, long time, and they realised no one's going to come and rescue him. And so Shackleton made this epic journey. And it'd be interesting, notice this, they left the end of 1914, right? So this is all occurring during 1915. And by the time they'd got there, nearly a year had passed, trapped on the ice. And so Shackleton set out in one of the lifeboats, no keel, with four other men, and sailed across 1,200 kilometres of the roughest seas in the world in a lifeboat, open lifeboat, to South Georgia. It was so cold that the spray froze when it hit the air and was settling, and they had to constantly scrape the ice off the canvas covering they put over the top of the lifeboat to stop the water coming in, to stop them from sinking. But when they got to South Georgia, they were on the wrong side of the island, and it's a very mountainous, glacier-covered island. Their boat was damaged, and they walked. After sailing this way in freezing cold conditions, he took two other men with him. They left two men, and they walked 36 hours through the snow, totally uncharted territory, no GPS, to the whaling station. And by the time they got there, they looked like monsters. They were so damaged by the environment that the first people who saw them ran away. They thought they were monsters walking into their camp. But he did that. They kept going, that last 36 hours of walking, because back here there were 23 men waiting to be saved. No one knew where they were, and all those men were depending on him. And please move on. Please move on. There we go. So that's Shackleton there when he was watching his boat sinking. That's when the ship sunk. And that's the little lifeboat that they pushed off to cross 1,200 kilometres of the Antarctic Ocean in. But this is what very few people realise. This is why he wrote in his book, and also when he gave his speech, and there's the link. He wrote, "When I look back upon those days, with all their anxiety and peril, I cannot doubt that our party was divinely guided, both over the snowfields and across the storm-swept sea. I know that during that long, tormenting march, of 36 hours over the unnamed mountains and glaciers of South Georgia, it very often seemed to me that we were not three, but four. I said nothing to my companions about this, but afterwards Worsley, one of the two men, said to me, "Boss, I had a curious feeling on the march that there was another person with us." Crean confessed to the same idea. One feels the inadequacy of human words, the inability of mortal speech to tell of things intangible. But a record of our journeys would be incomplete without a reference to a subject very dear, near to our hearts. I thought it was interesting that they left that out of the documentary. It's interesting, after repeating the story of the appalling voyage in the open boat from Elephant Island to South Georgia, he quoted these words from Psalm 139. "If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me." He repeated these words most impressively and said that they were a continual source of strength to him. Shackleton was a failure. All his expeditions failed. But in many ways he was the greatest hero because he rescued all his men after nearly 2 years. Those men waited on Elephant Island 4 months before they were rescued, because after Shackleton got to the base, they had 3 attempts in steel, steam-powered sailing ships to get down to Elephant Island, and they were stopped by the ice. It was only the 4th time heading off from Chile that they made it through. Shackleton saw an opening in the ice and he hunched that they could get through, and he got through and rescued the men. They had 3 days of food left. But every day, the guy Shackleton had left in charge got the men to pack up as if the boss was coming back that day. And when Shackleton arrived, in less than half an hour, all the men had been rescued because they were all packed up, ready to go. And then every evening they unpacked and set up camp. That reminds you of somebody else that's coming in, doesn't it? And being ready. About a quarter of a century ago, I was the senior author in a couple of textbooks on the environment. The one on the right was published by UNSW Press, Union of New South Wales Press, and then Zed Books, and it was used as textbook around the world for a decade or so. And then later on, I was involved in writing a chapter, "How Can Christian Industries and Institutions Practice Environmental Care?" This is a book put out by our church, published Review and Herald, called Entrusted. Last year, there was a program advertised at the uni by the Laureate Professor Naidu on how do we tackle some of the threats to our environment, the pollution, the climate change and biodiversity loss. And it's interesting, he talked about a number of things. The atheist D.O. Wilson, who's an eminent biologist at Harvard, specialised in insects, and he's estimated that Earth is currently losing about 0.25% of its remaining species each year. That adds up. Every 4 years, 1% less. So, and it's interesting that this rate of loss is increasing. And there was another study in 2017 that was looking at particularly the loss of insects that play quite a subtle and important role in our environment, and the loss of insect mass. So I know as a boy, one of the things I used to do was collect butterflies, all the different types of butterflies. Now I rarely see a butterfly apart from cabbage moths. And I'm against cabbage moths. But another example is the earthworms. And we often don't realise and see the the loss of diversity that's occurring in the soil underneath. And we know there's some terrible agricultural practices going on at the moment around the world where people are pouring artificial fertilisers into the ground that is doing a lot of damage to the ecology in the soil. And so such is the decline in earthworms and these species. A movie that you might be interested in watching, particularly young people and homeschoolers, is Kiss the Ground movie. And there's the website there. And it's looking at how some of our farming techniques that we're using are really destroying the soil and reducing productivity and actually increasing the carbon content in the atmosphere. We always talk about burning of fossil fuels, but there are many other aspects and the way we farm. And there was a very important... I didn't list his book here, but there was a guy who was a professor of geography at the University of Toronto back in the late 1940s, Russell J. Smith is his name, and he wrote a book, Tree Crops of Permanent Agriculture. And it's interesting, he met Kellogg, and he was talking with Kellogg, and he said, you know, I think being a vegetarian is right, but it's hard for me to give up my meat. But one of the things that he emphasised was the importance of tree crops in growing food and how God had provided tree crops all around the world and their health benefits. For example, we could produce more sugar per hectare growing honey locusts than we do sugarcane and things like this. And there you would have a whole food. And so, of course, we have the loss of birds. I love big trees. Often when I'm near a big tree, I want to go and touch it. And tree, I don't have time to talk about trees, but timber is such an amazing material that God created for us from, you know, the really dense timbers like ebony through to balsa wood that we make the model planes out of, or in the olden days, and the structures and the bonding in trees. And they're doing research at the moment into the amazing bonding structure that is in trees. And they're using that now. And again, I forgot to put the link up, but if you ask me, I can send it to you. But they're actually using plants now, genetically engineered plants, to grow collagen to make heart valves that are better and longer lasting than human heart valves to replace human. So there's a lot of work there as they've studied the structure of living organisms and then modifying plants like safflower plants to actually grow these materials. But I love seeing big trees, and there's so few of them left now. These are American examples, of course, but the tallest tree in the world. But these are some Australian ones. And, of course, out the Watican Sea, we had those giant cedars. They were like that out the back. It's hard to find one now. And, of course, fish are declining. And we have, and you see the giant trawlers that are being used, particularly by some of the Northern Asian countries. They're massive trawlers that are just taking the krill out in huge amounts down around Antarctica and this sort of thing now, overexploitation. And then, of course, we had the pollution crisis. We were on holidays the other year when up at, saying at Halifax Park, when that container ship sunk off Newcastle, and the beach was like that. And Colin and I went down. We said, right, well, we pegged out an area. Let's totally clean that area. We can't clean the whole beach, but we'll clean an area. And of course, we have air pollution. Every time we use paints, we're evaporating these solvents into the atmosphere all the time. When we chlorinate our water, that chlorine eventually goes up into the atmosphere. All these sort of things that we're doing. And we know we've made holes in the ozone layer. I was in Tasmania on a holiday in January. And, of course, you burn so quickly down there because the hole in the ozone layer. And then we have water pollution with the untreated sewage and all the chemicals that get washed down. And I was at a meeting at Sydney Uni just recently, and one of the guys... came up to me and said, John, you know, we need to get more funding into the problem of nanoparticles getting into our water supplies, into our water system. These nanoparticles that are being used in cosmetics and detergents and things, and they're not breaking down. They're getting into the fish, they're getting into us. All these sort of things, and soil contamination from all these herbicides and pesticides. And then, of course, we've got the electromagnetic pollution. A number of people said to me when we were away, oh, I sleep so much better when we're out camping somewhere. And I thought, well, I wonder if it's because we're away from the electrical circuits in our homes and all the microwaves and these sort of things. And we can't see this, but we all have mobile phones and we all have, there's all these base stations nearby that are beaming out the microwave radiation that's absorbed by our body. But what about climate change? And we hear a lot about climate change. Well, there's the data. That's the real data there. The black line is the increase in observed temperature. And where's that one measured? I'm not sure where that's measured. But yeah, but that's a leading journal research article on that. That's a longer one where they've estimated the temperature probably from tree rings and ice core data back over the last 2,000 years or so. And we can see it's risen roughly about just over a degree centigrade during that time. The carbon dioxide levels, again, as measured out there in Hawaii, and they measure them out there, they're a fair way away, although they do have a big volcano nearby. And you can see the increase there roughly after the World War II has certainly seemed to increase a bit. And so it's interesting, though, that these levels show a peak and a trough. And again, that movie, Kiss the Ground movie, is a good one that they have a lot of data on this. I don't know whether you can see the... Can you see the lines going up and down here in the parts per million? And so this is winter time in the Northern Hemisphere. Then all the trees shoot their leaves. Sorry, the other way around. This is winter time in the Northern Hemisphere. And the levels go up. But when the trees shoot their leaves, the levels drop down quite significantly just due to the foliage. And I think the biggest problem with the rise in carbon dioxide is all the trees we're chopping down, all the greenery we're destroying, you know, and we're ploughing up this, you know, beautiful orchard area over the back here, and it's all going to be concrete driveways and roads. So there's some big questions about climate change. What percentage of carbon dioxide increase is actually due to deforestation? They've cleared most of the trees on Madagascar. They're clearing massive amounts of trees in New Guinea at the present time. When we flew over Tasmania, when you drive down the tourist road, you see all this wet eucalypt forest on the side up to the top of the hills. But when you're in a plane on the other side of the hills, it's all being cleared out of sight. And with the temperature cycles, we know after the flood, there have been cyclic temperatures. And so and it concerns me. People are worried about the world getting a little bit warmer. Surely it'd be greater in Scotland to have warmer weather. But anyway, you know, they had a big protest in Scotland about global warming and thought they're crazy. I'd want warmer Scotland. But anyway, everybody's different, eh? But the bottom line is that plants grow better. The higher the carbon dioxide level, plants grow better and faster. When the oceans warm up, we get more water dumped over in the desert areas. Look at all the rain they've had over in central Australia. Sarah, the Sahara Desert used to be a fertile area with rivers and villages. Is having a slightly warmer earth bad? I would have thought more food can be grown. Of course, there's the argument, what roles do volcanoes play? And we need to look at this carefully. We can see that the bottom line is eruptions more than 0.1 of a cubic metre, cubic kilometre, sorry. Point. And while the number of volcanic eruptions has increased, most of them have been fairly small. The amount of large volcanic eruptions has remained fairly constant. And so while volcanoes do add some carbon dioxide, it's probably less than from burning coal. But underwater volcanoes can heat the oceans. But volcanoes can emit particulate matter that causes cooling. And you can see there that back in 1991, when Mount Pinatubo erupted, it cooled temperatures for 2 to 3 years. So there's a lot of things we can't control. And we know back in 1815, there was a massive eruption that really upset and caused famines in Europe and so forth due to coldness. So we can't control volcanoes. Only God can. And climate modelling is very complex due to feedback mechanisms. Coliferous, which make up about 10% of the plankton biomass, help regulate the temperature of the oceans. And see, this is an example of a fascinating feedback service. They thrive in warm seas. They release dimethyl sulfide into the air, which nucleate water droplets and cause clouds to form, which then block the sun and cool the oceans. So it's an amazing cycle there. But what are we doing? We're destroying our plankton reserves. So these are the things. God set up amazing regulatory systems. And really today, climate change mechanisms and their implications are not fully understood. And there's a good article there on the creation.com website on anthropogenic global warming, again, that you can look up, looking at a biblical approach. And, of course, God had lots of environmental laws. God was interested in the environment. And so if we look up Genesis 1, verses 28. Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. We read there. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So that was interesting. They had dominion over the moving things. And of course in Genesis 2:8 and verse 15, we read, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till it and to keep it. And so that was one of the work things that we were to do. We were to look after the land. And then, of course, when after the Exodus and after sin and so forth and the Exodus, there are a number of examples. For example, in Deuteronomy 22, verses 6 and 7, it talks about if you come across a bird in the nest, take the eggs but not the bird. If you're laying siege to a city, don't chop down the fruit trees around the city for timber to use in the siege. And the rules about sanitation. When you defecate, go outside, dig a hole and bury the excrement. And so there are many other rules about protecting the environment. But one of the things we don't often talk about today is the environmental law that was the observance of a Sabbath year every seventh year. And during this land, the land was to have a Sabbath rest and not be sowed or pruned. In other words, it was to just be let go for that time. And it's fascinating the role that weeds play, actually, in the environment. So many farmers, and they learned these lessons in New Zealand, I understand, that by eliminating weeds, they didn't realise that weeds often bring nutrients up to the surface and also often provided a bit more balance of non-amino acids, of fatty acids and so forth. And so it's interesting that failure of the land to give the land its sabbatical years of rest and idolatry are the two reasons for the Babylonian captivity given by Ezra in 2 Chronicles 36. 20 to 21. I think this is one worth looking up and reading, actually, because maybe we can skip over this when we read 2 Chronicles. And I think this was pretty well the end of the traditional Old Testament, wasn't it? Is that right? Some Bible scholars, is 2 Chronicles the last book of the Old Testament? Nobody's answering. Okay, that's all right. 25. 2 Chronicles chapter 25, 2 Chronicles 36. Reading there, 2 Chronicles 36, verses 20-21. He took into exile, this is going into Babylon there, in Babylon, those who had escaped from the sword, and they became servants to him, that's Nebuchadnezzar's sons, until the establishment of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed its Sabbath. All the days that it lay desolate, it kept Sabbath to fulfill the 70 years. I think that's quite interesting, because when you count back the 420 years before that, you come to the time when David founded Jerusalem. And so it's interesting that they had that Sabbath. So when we look at Christians and environmental care, I guess the first thing we need to do is to acknowledge that our world is the creator gift from God, and to acknowledge that we live in a world that has all these interconnected ecosystems. We don't live in isolation. All our activities interact with the environment. And one of the sad things is, and this comes home to me whenever we have a clean-up day, is all the piles of stuff that is out, of chairs that have broken, play toys that have broken, because they're such poor quality, they haven't lasted. And they then go out and they then become landfill. And people don't go around and seem to fix them up. I can remember my first bike was a second-hand bike that was given to me that I had to repair. I had to go to the bike shop and buy bits and pieces to make it work. I drove past a neighbour's place the other day and several bikes had been just put out on the road to be collected, and they look pretty good. I noticed they've gone, by the way. But, you know, so much of this stuff is put out. And what has happened is we've become trapped in this economy that is based on consumerism. You've got to keep selling the stuff. You've got to keep selling the clothes. You've got to keep selling the cars. And the cars now, how long are they going to last with all the computers and plastic parts? And there are some old cars that, you know, still go and are very serviceable. But many of the goods are not designed to last. When I was a boy, went shopping with a cotton bag, and we brought our things home in a cotton bag. A lot of the furniture now is chipboard furniture, which just falls to bits, rather than solid timber furniture built with the amazing timber structures that God designed. And our planet is limited. We're on this little sphere, you know, orbiting the sun. We're limited volumes of ocean and air and this sort of thing. So as Christians, I think it's part of being a Christian is to be a steward ourselves and to think about what resources do we consume when we earn a living? What resources do we consume when we spend the income we earn? We need to think about these things. Can we reduce our impact by sharing what we have? And that's a really important Christian principle, to share. We can, of course, recycle and repurpose materials. We can restore and replant our environment, and these are important things to do. Replant trees. Look at ways we can restore it and do others to do the same. But motivation, of course, is underpinned by love towards God. We were told, Jesus pointed out, the main commandment is to love God with all our hearts, our soul and mind, and to love our neighbours as ourselves. And this planet belongs to God. If we love God, we'll care for our planet, but also our fellow human beings. And we think there's about 1 billion people. I mean, that's an enormous amount of people. 1 billion people compared to this group here that are suffering now because they're undernourished. They don't have enough food. Why? There's natural disasters. There's political corruption. That's a big one, unfortunately. poverty and over-exploitation of the environment. They've destroyed the environment, like in Africa or in the Middle East, the goats grazing, too many goats grazing, people cutting down too much vegetation to burn to cook their food on, and not enough is regrown. By caring for our environment, we can help save others. But you know, the most important thing that isn't being talked about is caring for our spiritual environment. You know, if we're going to be witnesses in these last days, it's very important that we care for the Christian environment, because just as our physical environment is being polluted and destroyed, at the same time, much is being done to destroy and pollute the Christian values and influence in our society. That's happening all the time in our media. Just like in this beautiful documentary on Shackleton, they didn't mention anything about his Christian faith. They just had a quote from him at the end that they, where he talked about seeing God in nature. Just a very little quote in all the 90 minutes of the film. All the time we can see, you know, Christian principles being attacked, particularly in our media. It's creeping into our education system. It's being forced on us in our schools. And while our planet warms, the Christian faith in our society is growing cold. And just like we need to work for the environment, we need to work for save our Christian faith by increasing our Christian footprint. We can look at our environmental footprint, how many trees we're growing, how much water we're using, this sort of thing. But what's our Christian footprint? How can we increase our Christian influence to those around us? Can we change the decor of our homes to more openly reflect our Christian faith? And I praise the Lord for my Christian wife. She puts up little Christian quotes around our room and in our bedroom and in the kitchen area. And she has them up on the wall and puts things up and they change. And she writes out little things and she's given me little things to put in my wallet. And at times I've used them too and they've been a help. And how can we can think about how can we decorate our home so that when people come in, they know this is a home of Christian faith. This is a home that believes in the Lord Jesus Christ as our Saviour and King. How can we change our everyday speech and our social activities? I know a number of university colleagues, when they're emailing me, they will talk about acknowledging, or when we have meetings, they talk about acknowledging the traditional owners of the land. What about acknowledging the creator of our land? You know, that's so important to do. There are others, when they write to me, they'll say, you know, Professor Ellen or so-and-so, she, her. And I thought, you know, this is ridiculous. Some people wanting to be referred to as they. This is something that is creeping into our society. And it's not biblical. In the beginning, God created them male and female. And while there are mutations, they're a very small percentage, about 1 in 10,000 births. Has a genetic mutation of the reproductive organs that way. Can we improve our worship services and fellowship meetings to reach out to the lost? What can we do to improve the influence of this little centre of worship here? You know, I rejoice even when I see the Sunday churches and a pile of cars around, because I think there's still people there, they're worshipping God. Sure, they've got their days of the week mixed up, but they're still worshipping God, and God knows that people, and I think maybe at the end a lot of those people will come through. You know, while there's much promotion of the environment concerns, and there is a need to act, you know, we need to reduce the massive devastation that's going of the fisheries around the world. We need to reduce the massive pollution in our oceans and nanoparticles and all these sort of things. But the greatest need is the need for action to save souls for eternity of those who, without the knowledge of God's free gift of salvation through faith in Jesus Christ, their personal Saviour, those people will perish. And remember John 17:3. Our purpose in life is to know God, and through him, and we know God through his Son Jesus Christ, and help others to come to know Jesus Christ also. May God bless our efforts to save souls. Thank you.